Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are taking on a source that, well, it asks us to look at the world, and maybe ourselves, through a pretty controversial lens. We are diving into Katherine Page Harden's groundbreaking book, The Genetic Lottery: Science for a More Equal World.
Yeah, this book it's definitely got some explosive ideas. It really forces us to confront a truth that, you know, many people fighting for equality have frankly tended to avoid.
Which is?
Well, if we accept the science, and there's a lot of it now, that genetics plays some role in influencing life outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
Things like, say, academic success, income potential. What does that actually mean for our ideas about fairness, meritocracy?
Could it undermine the whole fight for social justice? Or could it somehow actually strengthen it? That's the big question she tackles.
That's exactly the core tension. For a long time, the progressive thinking was often to just deny biology had much, if anything, to do with our destiny. But modern science is making that stance harder and harder to hold.
Right. And Harden's argument is, look, we need to embrace the science, not run from it.
Absolutely. So our mission today for you listening is basically to give you the roadmap for her argument. We want to show you how acknowledging genetic differences, this idea that we all start with different levels of genetic luck, might actually be the most solid foundation for demanding a truly more equal society.
It kind of flips the script, doesn't it, on how we usually talk about merit and, well, inequality.
Totally flips it.
Okay, so before we get into the book itself, let's unpack the author. Because who she is professionally is just crucial to understanding why this argument lands the way it does. Who is Katherine Page Harden?
Okay, so she's a serious scientist, professor of psychology at the University of Texas at Austin. And her field is behavioral genetics, basically. The study of how genes and environment work together to influence how we behave.
And she's not just theorizing, right?
No, not at all. She has a PhD in clinical psychology. She's published tons of research, works with twin studies, adoption studies, and now these massive cutting-edge genomic data sets. She's really in the trenches of the science.
Okay, and this is where it gets tricky politically. Because the history of genetics, let's be honest, is really fraught. It's been horribly misused in the past to justify inequality, racism, eugenics.
Absolutely. It's got a dark history.
So why is Harden's position, being both this rigorous scientist and someone clearly committed to social justice, why is that so important here?
It's because she occupies this this pretty rare middle ground. On one hand, she pushes back hard against what she calls genophobia, you know, the fear often seen on the political left that any talk about genetic differences automatically leads down a slippery slope to bad places.
Right, that fear is real.
But just as strongly, she rejects what you might call genetic determinism. That's the tendency, sometimes seen more on the right, to use genetic differences as an excuse. Like, oh, well, some people are just genetically predisposed to struggle, so why should society invest in helping them? She fights both those extremes.
So she's saying we have to be honest about the data, look at what the science actually says, but then use that honesty, use that truth to build better, fairer policies.
Exactly. That's the tightrope she walks. She insists that if we want policies that actually work, we've got to deal with the world as it scientifically appears to be, not just how we wish it was.
Okay, let's get to the book's core idea then, the central premise. Genetics matters, differences exist, but they're unearned. What's the quick pitch for the genetic lottery?
The elevator pitch is basically this. Recognizing that genes influence human differences shouldn't make us accept inequality. It should actually motivate us to fight harder for more social equality.
And the key metaphor she uses, the one that really helps you grasp it, is the genetic lottery.
Yeah, think about it like this. When you're conceived, you get a random mix of genes from your parents. It's totally arbitrary, like being born into a certain family income or in a certain place, pure chance.
Okay.
So the outcome of that random draw, your specific genetic inheritance, is completely unearned. You didn't do anything to deserve it. Therefore, Harden argues, no one inherently deserves the huge advantages that might come from, say, getting genes linked to traits society currently values highly.
Like cognitive skills or maybe certain personality traits.
Right. Just like nobody deserves the disadvantages that might come from drawing a tougher genetic hand. It's all luck of the draw.
So the moral takeaway hits you right away. If success isn't just about hard work and virtue, but also about luck, genetic luck, social luck, then that whole idea of a pure, maybe harsh meritocracy,
it starts to crumble. The idea that people deserve every single bit of their success because they alone earned it, that gets seriously challenged.
It forces a kind of humility, then.
Exactly, humility. And the book basically lays out a roadmap for how we can square the scientific reality with progressive values, how we can rethink the way we distribute opportunities and rewards in society.
All right, let's dig into the science a bit, because the terms matter. Hardin is careful with them. First up, heritability. This one causes a lot of confusion.
Oh, yeah. It's super tricky. So heritability, the way scientists like Hardin use it, is about the proportion of the differences we see between people in a specific population that can be traced back to genetic factors.
Okay, wait. Let me push on that, because this is where people get tripped up. If a study says height is, like, 80% heritable, does that mean 80% of my height comes from my genes and only 20% from, like, what I ate growing up?
No, nope. That's the common mistake. It's not about individuals like that. Heritability applies to groups, to populations. It tells us how much genetics contributes to the variation in height across that whole group. Yeah. And crucially, even if something is highly heritable, it doesn't mean it's set in stone or that the environment doesn't matter.
Can you give an analogy, maybe nail that down?
Sure. The classic one is height again. In, say, a well-nourished Western population today, height is highly heritable. Lots of the variation between people is genetic. But take that exact same population and put them through a severe famine, what happens?
Everyone gets shorter, on average.
Exactly. The average height plummets because of the environment, the lack of food. The genes haven't changed, but the environment drastically changed the outcome. Genes might set potentials or tendencies, but the environment really determines how those play out.
That helps. Okay, so the science moved on, right? Big data changed things. Let's talk GWS and polygenic scores. What are these?
Right, this is the new era. GWS stands for genome-wide association studies. Think of them as massive digital fishing expeditions. Scientists scan the entire genomes of hundreds of thousands, sometimes millions of people. They're looking for tiny little variations in the DNA code. They're called SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms. They search for SNPs that are consistently found, even just slightly more often, in people who have a particular outcome, like maybe higher educational attainment or lower risk for heart disease.
So they're not finding the gene for something, but lots of tiny contributors.
Thousands of them, usually, each with a minuscule effect. And then they add up all those tiny effects to create what's called a polygenic score for an individual.
Okay, score. What does that score tell you?
It gives you an indication of your genetic predisposition or likelihood for that particular outcome based on the sum of all those tiny genetic nudges found in the GWS.
But, and Hardin stresses this, right? It's probabilistic, not deterministic. It's not like reading your future from your DNA.
Absolutely not. She's crystal clear on that. For any single individual, a polygenic score is actually a pretty weak predictor. It doesn't seal your fate.
So then, if it's weak for me, why should we as a society, or why should policymakers even care about these scores? That seems like the key question.
It is the key question. Okay, so while the score doesn't determine your individual destiny, it does reveal tendencies. Think of it like a weather forecast. A 30% chance of rain doesn't guarantee you'll get wet.
Right.
But if you look at, say, 1,000 people who all have a polygenic score indicating a lower tendency for, let's say, easily completing school, you will see, on average, that group struggles more compared to 1,000 people with scores indicating a higher tendency.
Ah, okay. It's about group probabilities, not individual certainties.
Exactly. And those group-level probabilities, those statistical tilts, do have significant implications for social policy and understanding inequality.
So if these genetic factors influence things like how far someone gets in school or their income, how does it actually happen? It's not like there's a single gene for being rich, right?
Well, definitely not. It's way more indirect and complex. Genes influence things like our basic psychological traits, maybe temperament, how quickly we process information, our levels of persistence or self-control, how open we are to new experiences.
Things that society might reward or not reward.
Precisely. Think about a kid who, partly due to their genetic lottery, just finds it naturally easier to sit still in a classroom, to focus, to enjoy reading. That kid gets an immediate leg up in a typical school environment.
And then that initial advantage can kind of snowball.
Yes, exactly. That's what scientists call gene environment correlation, or sometimes niche picking. The kid who finds reading easy starts reading more, gets positive feedback from teachers, maybe gets put in advanced groups.
And they end up building stronger skills, which helps them later in life, maybe getting into college or finding a better job.
Right. They've effectively picked or created an environment, a niche that amplifies their initial, totally arbitrary genetic advantage. It compounds over time into what Hardin might call genetic privilege.
Okay, before we go further, we absolutely have to tackle the elephant in the room. Scientific racism. Talking about genes and social outcomes immediately brings up that dark history. How strongly does Hardin push back against misusing this science, especially regarding race?
Very forcefully. And crucially, her rejection is grounded in the science itself, in its limitations. She states very clearly that the research on genetic influences on individual differences within a given population tells us basically nothing meaningful about average differences between racial or ethnic groups.
And that's not just a political stance, it's about the data itself.
It's a technical limitation of the current science. GWS studies are almost always conducted within specific ancestral groups, like people of European ancestry or people of East Asian ancestry. A polygenic score developed using data from one group just isn't accurate or valid if you try to apply it to someone from a completely different ancestral background.
So the science literally cannot be used to make those kinds of comparisons between races right now.
Correct. She emphasizes this scientific boundary to keep the focus squarely on individual differences within society and how arbitrary luck, genetic luck, affects people irrespective of race.
Okay, that's a crucial distinction. And it lets her pivot to what feels like her central philosophical point. Using this science to challenge, even dismantle, the myth of meritocracy.
Yes. If your success, your income, your status isn't solely down to your own grit and virtue, but is partly influenced by the lucky hand you drew in the genetic lottery.
Then the moral claim that successful people are entitled to absolutely all the rewards of that success gets much weaker.
Much weaker. You can't take full moral credit for the results of a lottery you didn't choose to enter. It really should, as we said, inspire humility and lead us to question how we justify vast inequalities.
So let's boil this down. What are the really key themes, the main messages you should take away from this challenging framework?
Okay, theme one is pretty straightforward. Reclaiming genetics through scientific honesty. Basically, Hardin is saying we can't afford to ignore the science just because it makes us uncomfortable or because it's been misused before.
Pretending genetic influences don't exist doesn't make them go away.
Right. And it stops us from thinking clearly about how to design policies to actually counteract any negative effects they might have. We need honesty to build effective solutions.
And theme two. She really wants to get rid of that old nature versus nurture argument.
Totally. She argues it's always both hand. Nature and nurture constantly interacting. Our environment, our schools, our families, our social policies profoundly shapes how genetic predispositions actually get expressed. We as a society have a huge role in that.
Okay, theme three brings us back to luck and challenging meritocracy.
Yeah, this is central. If someone's struggling, it might be because they drew a tough hand in the social lottery born into poverty, maybe bad schools, and maybe also drew a tough hand in the genetic lottery, facing predispositions that make certain things harder.
Like learning disabilities or maybe health issues.
Exactly. Recognizing that double dose of bad luck, Hardin argues, should make us way more compassionate as a society and less likely to blame people for circumstances beyond their control.
And the final theme points towards action, redesigning institutions.
Ultimately, the goal isn't to change people's genes that's got creepy eugenic echoes. The goal is to change society so that those random genetic differences have less power to determine your life outcomes.
So use the knowledge to build systems, better education, stronger safety nets that give everyone a fair shot, regardless of the genetic hand they were dealt.
That's the idea. To level the playing field, acknowledging that the starting points aren't level to begin with, partly for genetic reasons.
The book has some really memorable lines that capture these big ideas. Let's pull out a few.
Yeah, she's got some good ones. Yeah. One that really encapsulates the core argument is the genetic lottery is a chance event, but its consequences are not.
Right. The initial draw is random. But how society responds to that randomness, how we structure things like schools or healthcare, that's a choice. We decide the consequences.
Yeah. Another one that hammers home the probabilistic point is acknowledging the causal power of genetics is not the same as genetic determinism. She repeats this idea constantly. Genes give tendencies, probabilities, not fixed destinies.
And the one that directly challenges that pull yourself up by your bootstraps idea, merit is not a genetic property of individuals.
Oof. Yeah, that cuts deep into the usual narratives about success. It says, you know, your success isn't purely a reflection of your innate virtue or worthiness. And maybe the simplest summary of her whole thesis: taking genetics seriously means taking equality seriously.
She argues the science itself pushes us towards egalitarian policies, not away from them.
That's her core claim.
Okay, let's talk practical applications. If we take this seriously, how does it actually change things, policy-wise?
Well, for one, it provides a really strong moral justification for things like robust social safety nets, universal basic income, progressive taxation.
How so?
Because if the gap between the rich and poor is partly due to the random luck of the genetic draw, then redistributing wealth isn't just about charity, it's more like social insurance. It's insuring everyone against the arbitrary bad luck of drawing a disadvantageous genetic hand, just like we insure against house fires or car accidents.
That's a powerful reframing. What about in education?
It could really shift things away from a one-size-fits-all model. The fear is always that genetic info could be used for selection for eugenics.
Right, creating genetic elites or something.
But Hardin argues for the opposite. With extreme ethical care, this awareness could help us identify kids who are likely to struggle with specific things, say, a predisposition towards dyslexia, not to label them, but to provide earlier, more intensive, more targeted support.
So using the knowledge to allocate resources towards those facing genetic disadvantages to help level the playing field.
Yeah.
An anti-eugenic use, basically.
Exactly. That's the ethical imperative she sees.
And what about just personally, how we think about ourselves and others?
I think it fosters both humility and empathy. If you've been successful, it encourages you to recognize the role that unearned luck, both social and genetic, played in your journey. It dials down the self-congratulation.
And if you're struggling?
It can potentially reduce feelings of shame or personal failure, understanding that you might be navigating not just social barriers, but also biological headwinds that aren't your fault. That can be, well, maybe a bit liberating, or at least put things in perspective.
Okay, wrapping up. What was the biggest surprise for you reading Hardin's work? What really stood out?
You know, for me, it was the sheer clarity of the argument that scientific honesty is actually our best tool for fighting inequality. Like a lot of people, I think I'd vaguely viewed genetic research in this area as dangerous territory, maybe something best left untouched if you care about social justice.
Yeah, that's a common feeling.
But Hardin makes such a compelling case that engaging with the science, understanding its implications, and integrating that knowledge into an egalitarian framework is the only way to build progressive policies that are both effective and morally sound in the long run. Ignoring it just leaves the field open to those who would misuse it.
I felt that too. The core lesson really feels like a paradigm shift. Mm-hmm. On one hand, it's deeply humbling realizing just how much sheer arbitrary luck shapes our lives, biologically and socially. But on the other hand, it's strangely empowering because it highlights that we as a society still have the power and the moral reason to choose how much that luck gets to matter. We can design our institutions, our rules, to minimize the impact of that arbitrary draw.
We can choose to build a more equal world, even acknowledging unequal starting points.
A powerful message indeed.
Definitely something to chew on.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.